woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
Oh, it's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know, that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown.
Well, North Bay Station Jacks, I'm Tom Alley, just brought over on the board. S&P futures up, down 4. NASDAQ futures down 15. Dow futures down 48. This is after a slightly up day yesterday, very slightly, very, very quiet. It's kind of a snorer if you're trying to trade. Nobody wanted to trade any options with us. At least at my price, Maddie, they probably would have. I could have filled them and billed them, but I don't do that. How's that for a term? Fill them and bill them. I used to refer to the two brokers next to me from Pergamon, Broker Phil and Broker Bill. I don't know if they appreciated that all that much. anyway, Kevin, how are you?
Good morning. I'm doing okay.
What's
news?
Well, I just want to ask you a question. We have some stuff that, I mean, I know you wanted to cover. But I'm going to ask you gentlemen a question. Let's say we took you guys out of your real job, and which you enjoy, and put you into the CPI group in Washington. All right, and you're trying to tell people how much prices are going up or not up, depending on where you're at, or whether I don't think they get to say whether they're transitory or not. But anyway, we won't go down that road. I just heard a report this morning. As I think most people that have ever bought a car, well, I won't go down this road. There are people, people that I know that have walked in, driven in, and walked in the showroom, and said, well, you know, I need a new car. Okay. Well, what are you driving? Well, I'm driving that jalopy. What would you like? I'd like this one. How much are you paying a month? I'm paying $350. How about if I can get you in this one for $450? Would you do it? And the answer is yes. And they write it up, and off you go, and you're happy as a pig in slop. And I say, by the way, how much you get your old one? I have no idea. How much you pay for the new one? I have no idea. All right, well, there are those, okay? And they're actually probably very happy people because they don't bother themselves with all the sort of details that the rest of us might. But if you look at the CPI regarding a car, all right, or a truck. I always use, like, the F-150 because that seems to be one that they always are talking about. How do you keep that price? What's the price that you use, Kevin or Manny, in terms of doing the CPI?
Well, I'm guessing you're sort of fishing for this answer. You use the price of the truck this year versus the price of the truck last year.
I mean, you're going to use the list price on the window sticker.
Well, I would imagine the government people who do the reports are doing that. But the only price I care about is the one I have to pay.
Okay, but now you are. I'm not asking you as a consumer. I'm asking you as a CPI grunt.
As a CPI grunt? Oh, I'm definitely using the sticker price.
Okay. And
I don't know what else you would use.
I don't either. I mean, it would be very, very difficult to find out what the discount is at any given day of the week, and you would be very to the point where you have some kind of an idea that people pay. Depending on the vehicle, you pay 5 to 8% less than that, probably. I mean, I guess that's probably the average. But
Yeah, you might be able to find a dealer that a volume dealer that doesn't do negotiating. There's some of those out there. So the price is what it is, but it's cheap. You don't don't have to negotiate down to that price. They just sell at that price.
The guy doesn't have to go back and check with his boss three or four times. But if you're going
there are places that do that. I think CarMax does it that way, if I remember right.
Yeah, but, you know, if you're going to go buy something that expensive, don't you want the whole show? The guy going and talking to the boy. Mandy, don't you want the whole show?
No, I want to get back home, get the ball game on.
Yeah, but okay, but I mean, but it's fun, you know. Throwing this in, throwing that in, we'll throw
I don't want any of that. No, God, no.
Well, I mean, it's entertaining, I think.
Not to me.
Okay.
Well, you know, for entertainment value, I could see doing it by going and watching some other poor sap do it.
But, you know, it's America. It's, okay. Anyway, we don't want to. But first, now you have to adjust the price for any kind of improvements in the truck from last year. And I actually read something that said in the last 10 years, even though the price of the F-150 has gone up, in the eyes of the CPI people, it is flat because of all the additions to it. Now, obviously, if...
Right, so if you don't think the, you know, if you say last year's model didn't have the rear view camera standard and this year's model does, then you have to factor that out.
You add $300.
Again, there's a certain logic to that. But the fact is, if you gotta buy it and you don't get the choice, it's part of the increase in price.
Right. Okay. So my question is now we're going with the list price, which we pretty much have to, and we are going with the adjustment. I mean, I think if it's an option that people always get, I will run with that adjustment part because I'm going to say that. Actually, you know, I ran into a guy at a old car show, and back in 1979 or 80 or whatever the hell this guy's car, he had a Oldsmobile Delta 88, and he had the motor that came in the car because we had one, so I know it was a 350, the venerable 350, which you still they don't sell them anymore, but they used that motor up to like 1999 from God knows when. And so it had the venerable 350, but the standard, if you just bought it flat out, you still had three on the tree. The automatic was not, didn't come with it. So it was a, you know, $400 or $450, whatever you want to call it, option. Well, that's what they did call it, an option. And the guy told me that there was one of like four made that year that didn't have the automatic transmission. I can't imagine a motor that powerful with three on the tree, but somehow this guy had one. If anybody doesn't know what three on the tree is, it's a manual transmission where the shifter is on the steering column, which I got to believe the last one was made of those things was probably 79, 80, somewhere in there. And anyway, there are very, very few people had those things. I mean, I never saw one until I saw this one. So at some point when you get to be 95% of the people order an automatic transmission versus three on the tree, on a sports car, people still use a, you know, 4 or 5 speed, but once in a while. So at some point, you just add it into the price of the car. I certainly understand that you have to add that $400 that everybody's paying extra into the base number. I mean, that makes sense. But now if it's something that, you know, is sort of a government mandate that most people, you know, might want, might not want. I mean, if you back up camera, if you had a long driveway, I'd say I'd sure like to have one. If I had no driveway, would I pay $100 for a thing or whatever it costs? I don't know. You know, I mean, it comes down to more individual stuff. But the bottom line is, I just heard this thing on TV, long story short, way too late, is they're now, some study says that this year, you know, inflation's all over the place, even though everybody says it isn't. More people are paying full list price for cars, or even more than list, if ones are not available, than ever. So now, if we're saying the average mope, which we all are, goes in and if you go buy your F-150 and the list price is 50, most people are paying 45 or 46, which is probably where you are. Now all of a sudden, everybody's paying 50. Now what? Now, does that mean that the prices didn't go up or they really did go up 10%, and how do you capture them or you don't care? I think there's a lot of this stuff going on, Kevin, that when we have a bunch of buffoons saying it's transitory, it's not. I mean, if all of a sudden you're paying $5,000 more for that F-150, that's a lot of money. And obviously, first of all, for people that don't know why is it set up most of the time that people have a list price and then people play a lot less? I imagine you guys both have a solid idea on this. I'm hearing blanks.
No, not really.
Kevin, I don't know why I was so always intrigued by the car market, because everything about consumers and everything about the economy and how people buy stuff is embedded in how cars are sold. It's sort of like, if you want to learn about original companies and trusts and antitrust and monopolies, you got to read about railroads. Anyway, the reason why is because if you walk in with your old jalopy that is worth $5,000, and oh, by the way, you owe $6,000, how the hell do they get you out of it? All right, what they do is, because the pickup price is $49,000, they would be happy to sell it to you at $45,000. They're going to say, Kevin, you have to pay $46,000 minus the $6,000, because instead of giving you $5,000 for your car and charging you $45,000 for the F-150, they now charge you $46,000 for the F-150. Because they got to give you $6,000 for your car, because they got to send a check to the bank that you owe $6,000 to. So it allows them to take care of somebody whose trade-in is what, use the term, underwater.
Why does it allow them? They could do that anyway.
What do you mean?
What does it matter? Why do you have to have a false inflated price to do that?
Well, because if the...
It doesn't make sense to me.
Because you can't, if you want to finance the new one, and you paid $49,000 for it, who's gonna give you $52,000? So you're asking the new financer.
If you finance it, yes. for more, and you're gonna pay off,
yeah,
the old balance, you're just rolling it in. But basically, you're financing part of the old balance.
Correct. Yes.
And that's to get you to buy the car, because otherwise you don't have the cash to pay down the old balance on, or the pay off the balance on the old car. But so that's all they're really doing.
But psychologically,
they're lending you the money to pay off the old balance.
But because of the new. But it's within the.
But why do they have to have a false inflated price to do that? Why can't they just do that
for your psychology and for the new bank?
Oh, so it's a psychology thing. Like I said, they don't have to do that.
Well, because you also
it's
can't.
It's for idiots.
Well, no. What if you walked into Lakeside Bank and said, "I want to borrow $52,000, okay, for a new truck." Well, how much is the truck? We'll list at $49,000. Well, then why do you need $52,000?
Because of the financing.
Because they're,
you would just tell them that,
right?
Well,
right.
What I'm saying, it doesn't go over as well.
In the technical sense, if you want to do it that way, from the bank, you're going to have to take out two loans,
right?
Or you're going to have to, you know, refi one of your loans if it's with Lakeside Bank,
right?
So you know that's all. They're inflating the value of the collateral, and that's probably not something I would consider honest.
You're right, Matty. It gets to the same place.
It doesn't matter. It makes no sense.
But it gives you.
And what if you owe? What if you owe 10?
Well, then you
what
got a problem.
What if you owe 17?
Well, then you got a problem.
I mean, they're still gonna. They're still figure it out for you.
No, they won't. No, they won't.
I mean, I'm willing to bet if I go there and I have good credit or whatever. You know, obviously, if you have bad credit or something, then nothing. But if you go there and you have good credit, they'll figure it out.
Like,
they'll get you out of there with a
car. Kevin said, it won't be as easy. It won't just be.
They'll get. I guarantee you, if I walked in there today, I could walk out with a car.
At some level,
even if I owed more than four,
I'm saying
or three
it is,
or
it is,
six on.
I'm
my
saying it is absolutely
car.
Seamless. They don't even have to fight the battle that you owe $6,000 on your old car and I'm only giving you $5,000. They don't even have to say that. They just say, for you, $46,000, and you say, okay. It's all about perception.
I guess. It just seems pointless to me.
Well,
and now that it's explained to me, it seems even more pointless.
Well, if nobody wants to walk in and say, and they owe $10,000 on their car, and the guy says, well, that's interesting. It's only worth $8,000. Nobody wants that conversation.
Agreed, but I think everyone kind of knows that, although that's not the case in today's market. But
Manny,
over the course of the last 50 years, that's been...
Manny, all they're doing is they're either rolling it into the price of the new car, or they're inflating the trade-in value of the old one.
Right.
Either way, it's a lie.
Yes,
exactly.
But I mean...
And they're going to get you out of there with a car, because they want all the financing money, too.
Manny, and many days, let's just say in the OEX, there were 350 people in there, and everybody was a lot younger, somebody might walk in with a zit on their face, right? I mean, it just happens, right? It happens to everybody. Well, one day, one of the guys in there had one on his forehead, and somebody went out and bought a whole bunch of red dots where everybody stuck the red dot on their forehead right where his zit was. Now, that's the same thing. Everybody's got one. You'd rather. How many times have you walked into somebody, even probably somebody you care about, and first thing you say is, "Gee, you got a zit on you." You don't do that, right? So if you can have this conversation with somebody with a little bit of play in the price, and you never even have to have it, it's a better day. I'm just saying.
Sure. Yeah.
Say it's not that. I started the conversation by saying I always want to know exactly what I'm getting for what the car I brought in, and oh, by the way, the new one. I'm saying that's a very big minority. They just want to know, can you get me the new one for $100 more a month? And if the answer is yes, you drive out. And you leave the details to the dog.
You're right about that.
Anyway, long. But I mean, this is American. And this, my point I'm trying to make is when we're fighting this inflation lie battle and people are having all these conversations, every little thing like this you pick up on is information that a lot of times people don't have, and maybe they don't want to listen to. But to me, all of a sudden everybody paying list price on cars means the cars are up 10% or 8%. More than people are counting, is all I'm saying. That's, we got, like I said, the long story short, don't tell it. But I mean, it's, I think you're seeing that a lot of places because of quote shortages, because of quote something. But, all right, Kevin, what the, by the way, both of you guys, last night I'm driving home, and I heard they're interviewing, and this has to do with the new 22 state laws that the college kids. I'm intrigued by this because I don't know that much about it. They're interviewing some kid who's a football player, I guess, on Illinois. Never heard of the guy. Not that I'm an Illinois fan. I mean, but you could do this with Notre Dame kids. I know maybe two or three of them, and half of those guys all just graduated. The kid's talking about, this is the best thing that ever happened. Now he can take care of his family, blah, 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 instead of just play. What is he talking about? What's the immediate effect for 30 guys on the Illinois football team? Is there any? I mean, who's going to hire him? I mean, who's going to hire him? For what?
Well, you might hire him for appearances. You might hire him for autographs or something like that. But it's going to be local, and it's not going to be a lot of money. There's going to be very, very few college athletes that would command national advertising type of money. There just aren't. You know, how many from last year can you say, boy, if that guy had been able to do some kind of commercial or endorsement or endorse a product or whatever, if that guy would have done it, he would have made big money. Who can you name from last year that could have done that?
Well, I'm curious as, let's say Matty Weber, you know, he's out of the three of us, he's the youngest and most capable. I have a real...
He's the youngest.
Yeah, to be quarterback today, he can at least run. You know, maybe for his life, but he can at least run.
It would be for my life.
Yeah,
yes.
But I mean, how do you...
Because Tom and I would be blocking.
Yeah. Yeah, with us blocking, you'd be running.
I'd be handing off.
Yes, to Thomas, and he'd be getting hammered. But I mean, I'm trying to visualize. And this is what drives me nuts, and it's a short trip. I'm trying to visualize the ad for Matty Weber's cars, Chevys. It's not just going to be Thomas Hall. I mean, there might be a few guys that have that cachet, but if it's a couple of the offensive linemen, you're going to have to say University of Illinois starting tackles, Thomas Hall and God knows who, Herbie, showing up. Now, I don't think University of Illinois is going to allow their name on that ad without getting paid.
You know, I don't think they necessarily want to be a buzzkill for their athletes, because then they won't be able to sign any big time athletes. But if you said, "Come on down and meet the University of Illinois offensive line, get an autograph, and visit our cars," you know, visit our car dealer, you could probably do that. I'm just guessing on that, but you know, the NCAA can be pretty strange with its rules. But I would think that that's on the table, is something that you could say. Now, you know, really, what are they going to get for that? And how many people are going to go down there to do it? Maybe you get a poster. You know, maybe you get the offensive linemen together. They make their own poster, they produce it, and then they do autograph sessions with it. Something like that could work. But you know, how many players are popular nationally. How many players are popular in state? You know, like a Michigan player at, you know, throughout the state of Michigan where the people are pretty big.
How many would you recognize without their helmet on?
Pretty big on state U. And then most of them are just going to be are going to be local, if anything at all. And think of this: it's going to apply to athletes like, you know, the rowing team. You could see a Dick's Sporting Goods having the rowing team down there for in the spring when they're selling boats to do some kind of I don't know how you do a demo on dry land, but but to do something. You could see locally where the women's basketball team is popular here in South Bend that they could get some appearance fees, and they may get more appearance fees than the men's basketball team.
I'd say the 1 year I could sure see it. They had some girls there that who's the one girl that's still playing the NBA? She's gorgeous. What was her name? She's the number one pick.
Well, first of all, there are several, but
yeah. Who's the number one pick one year?
You wouldn't have to say locally, come on down and meet Erika Ogunbowale.
But I guess what I'm saying, when is this?
You wouldn't have to say, come on down and meet Skylar Diggins. Everybody knows who those people are.
Right.
It would have been Ian Book last year, as an example, or, you know, a handful of other players on the football team. But if you would have said, you know, come on down and meet, you know, meet one of the offensive linemen, a lot of people would have said, who's that?
I mean, I guess in this world we're in, I'm having you guys are using your head and you're trying to throw some logic into this conversation. And I guess my side of the argument is, if there is one, or the discussion, is that I'm having real trouble finding any logic sort of anywhere. I don't see how this ever, unless you're the one guy who's the, like you say, the quarterback or the very, shall we say, noteworthy girls basketball player or tennis pro or something. I don't see how it ever stops being a university event with the advertising. And if all of a sudden one of those guys gets in a fight and breaks somebody's jaw, the university is going to get sued. Not the guy. I mean, I don't see how you ever can break off far enough from the university to have it be your event. Now, if you're getting paid from Madden Football and it's just your name and everybody can see, even in the cartoon, that it's really Peyton Manning when he was at Tennessee, that part I get, but I see that happening once in a zillion.
Well, couldn't you see the players just allowing video football to use their name and likeness now?
Like I said, it's probably the only way that somebody would go to a player, a very nationally recognized player. You know, a Chip Hilton from the, I remember Chip Hilton Sports, or for somebody like that. I mean, not many people, you and I, well, you guys are really into it. How many people in the country would recognize a college quarterback by his face enough to be, well, without somebody saying, oh, by the way, this is the national championship quarterback from some school?
Think back over the years, over the recent years. How many college quarterbacks would have been recognizable?
Five a year at most.
Oh, at most, certainly on a national level, I don't even know that it's one a year.
Yeah, if you're talking on a national level, then I get it. But college, who cares about a national level? In Knoxville, Tennessee, the starting quarterback's a big deal.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Or in Lexington, Kentucky, the basketball team is a huge deal. And, like, you know, even in the...
And everybody knows who all the players are.
Exactly.
Right,
and even in, like, Big Ten schools... Like, the starting point guard on a Big Ten team could probably sign, you know, 50 basketballs and sell them for $100 a piece, and sign 50 pictures and sell them for $100, you know, $50 a piece, and sign a jersey and sell it for $500. And he could probably do that and sell out every month and make $5,000 a month just doing that to local people and kids and fans, and he could donate some of it and make a big online thing about it and make $60,000 just doing that.
I'm thinking, man,
easily.
What you just said... That's very clear, and I agree with you, that if you're the starting point guard on whatever team it is,
And you're going to be completely unknown to anyone else in the country.
Okay, what I'm saying is if they put your picture up there, I mean, hey, you know, I'll say you're a recognizable, good-looking guy. You see you once, you know it's Matty Weber. You're not just some face in the crowd, even now doing the show. But I'm saying you could put, if you were the quarterback of Iowa, you could put Matty Weber in the paper in a suit and say, Matt Weber is going to come to my car dealership and sign some stuff. And I'm going to say, you could pull that off because you have a personality. You have a, you're, if they see you once, they know it's Matty Weber. I'm saying that that's very rare to not have some kind of a combined.
You're stuck on this car dealership thing. No. Which is fine. I'm saying.
Yeah, try this instead, Tom. Try this instead. I'm Kevin O'Neill. I'm the point guard for Notre Dame. And, that's a laugh. But let's run with it. So I'm the point guard for Notre Dame. How easy is it for me to put together a website?
Well, pretty easy. Yeah.
Very cheap. Now, I want to do a poster. I want to have some other merchandise. And some of that merchandise may or may not be related directly to me. But it may be basketball merchandise. And, so I could even sell, I could sell Notre Dame licensed stuff on there as long as I pay the licensing fee for it. But I also have, my poster that I made independently. And then I go on the local sports, radio show and I say, I do a 30-second ad that says, hi, this is point guard Kevin O'Neill. I don't have to say where I'm from or anything. This is point guard Kevin O'Neill. And go on and give my pitch and just, come to KevinO'Neill.com and, there will be, all kinds of entrepreneurial efforts like that. And I think those kinds of things are totally feasible.
I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just, matter of fact, I'm encouraging that. I just, the idea of, as usual, when people sign our people, the people we elect, sign a bill, I have a feeling that if all three of us read the bill, which I don't have any intention of doing, I'm going to say we come up with a list of 50 questions and not 50 answers. That's all I'm saying. And the split between somebody selling the university and selling themselves, especially in a sport where you don't take your helmet off, I think the point guard in basketball has a much better chance, to be honest with you, than a tackle.
I would agree 100%.
That's all I'm saying. Is it
maybe not than a quarterback though?
Oh no, maybe not than a quarterback. Well, he gets to be interviewed by the good-looking girl after the game, right? That's why you want to be quarterback and not the tackle.
Well, and everyone knows his name. People don't usually know the right guard's name unless you're a really big fan.
Well, that's you with the Tripoli. Everybody knows your name.
No, I think that's Cheers.
So when we come back from break, let's talk about where the NCAA is on this right now.
Probably today. I bet they're sitting just like us trying to figure it out, but we'll do that. SP Futures down 2.25, and as if he's down 75 cents, looks like another snorer. On the 30th of June, we'll be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe. It's Matt Werber on the board. S&P futures down 2. NASDAQ futures up 75 cents. Make that 25 cents. Heading towards flat. Dow futures down 3. Pretty close to flat. I'm looking here in the Dow. I got Chevron, Texaco up $1.19. Goldman Sachs down $1.70. That's pretty much, there's a few of them that aren't even open, which never usually happens at this hour in the morning. We're not open. They're trading before the market. Nobody's open until 8:30. Well, you can trade it, but it's not open on the exchange. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX down 111.7%, so they're actually doing some trading over there. European stocks pull back as inflation pandemic fears linger. FTSE down 29.4, kick around down 34.5. It's really kind of astounding how few people relatively to the U.S. have been vaccinated, and it is kind of scary. I mean, I don't know, these guys seem to be pumping out all these vaccines, and I don't know what the problem is in some of these countries, but they seem to be pretty slow. Asia, Nikkei down 21, call that flat. Shanghai up 18, that's 0.5%. They were down. Asia was down pretty heavy yesterday across the board. Hang Seng, however, is down another 166.6%, so they've down a couple days in a row. Yesterday, Dow was up 9, S&P was up 1, NASDAQ was up 27, so like I said, it was a snorer. Bonds, 1.45, down 2 basis points, so they're going, again, the other way, which is bizarre, but it's happened. I say that every day, but it is true every day. One minus 0.19, the Japan positive 0.06, UK positive 0.72. Those are all 10-year rates, by the way. Oil up a full buck today, 73.98. Brent up 79 cents, 75.55. Natural gas up 11 cents, 3.74. I gotta believe that these guys are pounding a natural gas into the smaller reactors, the smaller electric producers out on the West Coast. RBOB unchanged at 2.24. Gold is down 279, 1760. Silver up 5 cents, 25.95. So those markets are quiet. Copper up 3 cents, 431. And we've got our friend Bitcoin down 1600 at 34,000. It's down 1600 to the exact same place it was yesterday, Matty. So it must have been up during the day after the show. And now it's back down to where it was. What do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We have an issue on the tri-state that happened early this morning. A crash involving two semi-trucks that happened just after 2 a.m. has the tri-state closed on the southbound side between the Stevenson and 75th Street, and it's all the way backed up to the Hinsdale Oasis due to this crash. But the tri-state completely closed. You'll want to avoid it if at all possible, because right now traffic is being diverted off at I-55, so you can't continue on the southbound tri-state anyway, so avoid it. But that's our big issue this morning. No issues coming in on the Edens or Kennedy, Eisenhower and Stevenson traffic building, but no accidents to report. Same for the Ryan, I-57 and the Bishop Ford. Lakeshore Drive is looking good in both directions. Off the expressways, there's a crash at 79th and South Maryland Avenue on the south side. And then north of there, State Street is closed between 55th and 51st due to police activity. Apparently there's a shooting investigation from last night that's continuing on this morning. The 29 state buses are temporarily rerouted. Weather today, more clouds, more rain in the area, a high of 78, but today should be the last day of rain for at least a little while. Right now it's overcast and 74, still dry, but rain in the area and a high of 78 today. For our Phoenix listeners, no rain down there, sunshine with a high of 106, right now it's clear and 87. In sports, the White Sox built a big lead against the Twins last night and held on to win 7-6. Cubs were out-dueled in a pitcher's duel last night, losing to the Brewers 2-1. And the Cubs have dropped 5 in a row. Diamondbacks lost to the Cardinals 3-2. NBA basketball, the Suns are back in action tonight, looking to win the Western Conference for the first time since 1993. They lead 3-2. Game 6 is tonight in L.A. against the Clippers. That'll be a 6 p.m. Arizona time tip-off. Chief.
What did the Bucks win last night?
They lost last night, and Giannis hyperextended his knee on a kind of a fluke play. He was going up for a rebound, and he landed on someone's leg, or someone's leg kind of crashed into his leg while he was in the air, and when he landed, it hyperextended his knee. It looked like it blew out his knee at first, and hopefully it didn't, but he did eventually walk off the floor, and then the Bucks couldn't recover. And they lost last night by, like, a lot, by, like, 22. And now it's a question if he's going to come back at all. And so now it really just add another star injury to the NBA playoffs, and it's completely wide open.
Atlanta.
Yeah, but knees don't bend that way.
It didn't look good, and yet I was amazed that he was walking around on the sideline, and they said it's just a hyperextension. I thought he blew out his knee the way it bent.
Yeah, just a hyperextension. Ugh.
So it's possible that he could return at some point, especially if they win this series, but I would be surprised.
Are you?
But they may. He may say, "Screw it! I'm coming back because this is the best chance I'll ever have to win a championship."
Are you driving up to Milwaukee tonight to join the Cubs? They've got
it's a 1 o'clock game. You have to leave soon.
They have to leave soon. They have three people now, two on the bench. If Brian can't play, and the catcher got hurt on the last play of the game last night, so he can't play.
Rizzo can't play.
So if you count those guys last night, the only backup players they have are Rafael Ortega and Jake Marisnovich.
Marisnick, yeah. They're banked up, and then they put Duffy on the 60-day DL, so he's nowhere near coming back. Supposedly Horner is going to be back this weekend, so that'll be huge in Cincinnati because he's been rehabbing at Iowa, and he's apparently healthy. And then Wisdom being the guy that he's been over the last couple months has been helpful because he's been a very solid player both offensively and defensively, so that helps. But yeah, they're at a point now where they're 5 games back, and they could completely fall out of this thing if they can't get some guys back and get healthy and get back in this race.
I would agree.
Last night, I mean, you're going against a top five pitcher in all of baseball in Brandon Woodruff, and you try to do it without Bryant, Rizzo, Horner, a banged up Contreras. I mean, Jesus, it's amazing that they lost by one.
They look the same. They strike out 15 times no matter what.
Well, it doesn't help.
No, it doesn't help.
But I'd still like to have those guys in the lineup.
But they do this. You know what's it? If you do the same thing. The same way, looking for a different result. What does that make you, an idiot or what?
They say it's the definition of insanity to do the same thing over and over again and expect a different result, even though that's not literally the definition of insanity.
No, it is not. what the hell? I had another question for you, gentlemen. It'll have to. We got to get onto something more interesting. But
well, you're continuing the NCAA conversation.
I know, but I was. Did you guys catch any of the Ben Zobrist stuff yesterday?
Well, I caught it from a couple weeks ago about his.
Oh, it's ongoing.
His divorce filing.
Well, no, he's suing the preacher who is.
Oh, he's suing him?
Yeah.
How can he sue him?
He's suing the church or the preacher or somebody for. Well, he was the story, and of course, Ben Zobrist was a serious ball player. He's the first one of the guys that
World Series MVP for the Cubs.
Yeah, he's first one of the guys that could play a bunch of positions, and he was a contact hitter. And didn't he win one for Kansas City too?
I think he did. Yeah.
And when he was in Tampa with Madden,
maybe
he played in the World Series. Yeah,
but he
He played in the World Series. I mean, Ben Zobrist has been a very valuable player for some really good teams.
But somewhere along, he essentially retired/quit because he was getting divorced and was having a real issue with it, right? He took a time off and never came back. After then the COVID came.
He did come back briefly, but yeah, that was it. And then he just retired.
Well, because, I mean, he's very religious, and I won't say one of these oddball religions, but I guess I just did say that. But and he's, you know, nothing wrong with any of that stuff. This is America. Well, evidently, the divorce hit him real hard, and the fact that the pastor was the one sneaking into the bedroom, it's got him pretty well messed up. And now he's suing the guy in the church, and I mean, it's a mess.
Well, supposedly,
I would imagine if the pastor was counseling them,
he was doing more than counseling.
And then, yeah. Having an affair with the wife, that might be some kind of breach. I don't know how that stuff works.
Yeah, if the pastor is saying, you know, give her space right now. And meanwhile...
Yeah, go for a walk.
Yeah, meanwhile, while she's, quote-unquote, giving her space, he's with her. That would be a problem. She also, but that was during the divorce proceedings. So she was, I think she was messing around before that with different guys,
right,
too.
Right, yeah,
which led to the divorce. And now the pastor is just icing on the cake.
God. What did it... This is, you couldn't write fiction like life, could you?
And we still had to listen to her sing Benny and the Jets every time he walked up, which was absolute murder.
Yeah. Oh, God. All right, Kevin. Go on.
Just a couple of, before we get off of baseball, the White Sox did get some good news on Luis Robert yesterday. He can increase his baseball activities now, and they may see him back. Which was far from certain for this year.
What was his injury? I forget.
And I think Eloy Jimenez got some clearance a couple of weeks ago to step up what he was doing in his rehab, so he could start swinging a bat and things like that.
Luis Robert had the torn hip flexor issue.
Yep.
And Eloy, of course, had the the torn labrum when he jumped over the wall trying to make a catch. And
he had a torn tendon,
something in his shoulder. Yeah,
I mean, no, it wasn't the muscle; it was a tendon. Which I mean, he needed surgery, I think, to reattach it.
But yeah, Kevin's right. That is good news. And I've read Luis Robert could start a rehab assignment as soon as 30 days from now.
Well, I won't say he's lucky.
If they can just hang in, and then they start getting a couple that are, you know, more of their guys back, they're not going to get Madrigal back, but. You know, if they can get Robert back, and you know, and they have guys who just have underperformed this year, who, you know, like most baseball players, you eventually revert to your numbers. I think that's really good news for the White Sox. So they may hang in. I think the Cubs are fading out of it. You know, they had got a lot of guys, you know, contributing beyond their historical norms, and that just never continues.
I'm not so sure. I mean, you look at the Cubs lineup, and again, I don't want to go down the road of me being a questionable statistician. By the way, every single night now, are you astounded by the stats that these people come out? Do they think that that's now entertainment? It isn't for me. I don't know. Maybe it is for other people, but the idea that every single night, this guy has hit four doubles and two strikes on a fastball. Who cares? I mean, is it a stat game now that who's the guy that comes up with this stuff? The announcer just has to pop one of these out every inning or two. It's just sort of weird.
There's a lot of articles about it, about how some announcers are really overdoing the stats to the point where it's annoying the audience. But some fans like it. I just think every industry is much more data driven than it was 30 years ago or 50 years ago, and baseball is no different. So there's a lot of data that executives use to value players, and you can choose to learn that and follow it, or you don't have to. But you're right. Boog Xiambi for the Cubs is big into that, and he talks about it a lot more than, say, Len Casper did. And Len Casper talked about it a lot more than, say, you know, a handful of other broadcasters. Yeah. So,
well, I just, there's a...
It's just how deep you want to get into it.
It's like sitting at the bar with Cliff Clavin sometimes, though.
Yeah.
Right? Sometimes it's a little boring.
Well, I mean, I don't want to get on this road, but there's a school of statistics and mathematics as, take for instance, since we are Stocks and Jocks, the random walk theory or technical analysis for stocks, or commodities or whatever it happens to be. I actually think it works better in commodities, but that's just one man's opinion. But the technical analysis, there is no question that if you wanted to go back and look at the New York Stock or the Dow or the S&P or corn prices or whatever it is, you can see technical patterns from the past. You can see a banner, a rising this, a double head and shoulders. You can see all that. And you can look back and say, wow, look, here's a head and shoulders pattern in 1940. And there's another one here. And it looks like every time this happens, or there's a rising pennant or whatever other terms these guys use. And you can go back and you can identify all those things. Well, when I was at the University of Chicago, of course, they were the first people that had the Center for Security Studies, where they went back to like as far back as they could go, like 1900, and put every single tick into a computer back when you had to use cards, and they came and they basically came out and said, yeah, there are head and shoulders patterns. There's rising pennants. There's rising this. I mean, I wish we had somebody on here to name all this stuff, but I can't. And they say, well, yeah, those are patterns, but none of them are predictive. I mean, there's nothing predictive. You can't kick it into a computer or have any kind of analysis that says, we are in the middle of a head and shoulders pattern, so today we're going to be up, or today we're going to be down. It's anecdotal, it's interesting, but it's not predictive. And a lot of the stuff in baseball, for sure, Matty Weber's hit four doubles on two strikes when he screws up and has an orange lace and a white lace in his shoes. That's a statistic, but it's not predictive. It doesn't mean anything the next time you come up, does it? And I think we're walking into that area. That's just one man's opinion.
Yeah, I've never heard anyone give out that stat, but they use it to value players and to build a team, and that's how and it is predictive completely. If you ask the executives that's how they build their team, and it doesn't always work. I mean, obviously, nothing's perfect, but over a big sample size like a full 162 game baseball season, it is very predictive.
The amount of people that have made money as technical analysts over the last 50 years. They've made a fortune. And I'm just saying, I don't think it's predictive. No computer could say you're in the middle of a head and shoulders plant or this is a rising pennant.
Nothing's going to be perfect, no. But like Kevin said, it's no different than the old saying of a guy typically plays to the back of his baseball card statistically. You just see it over a sample size, and you just know that if he stays healthy and he plays every day, Anthony Rizzo's going to hit between 25 and 32 home runs. I mean, it's just what he does. And now they have more stats to do that for more players.
But you also have people that can, sometimes to the good or unfortunately to the bad, you'll find a guy. Well, Ryan Sandberg was one of those for sure. He learned to look for certain pitches as he realized there were certain pitches he really could handle and drive. He became a home run hitter. He never was anywhere in the minor leagues or any place. And like, what did Jim? What was his name? Who was the original manager? It said this guy has enough power to drive certain balls if he gets him in the right spot. And as Steve Stone said, the inside fastball is going to put this man in the Hall of Fame, and it did, because he realized that if I can go up there and if I look for that pitch and one or two strikes, and the guy gives it to me, I can put this out of the park. He didn't have power like Sammy Sosa, right? But people recognize him, and some people really learn as they go. And all of a sudden they have like the breakthrough year, and you wonder what happened to this guy. I think that does happen, Matty. I think the stats can change. But you're right. I mean, Rizzo is what, 32, 33? And whatever they throw at him, he seems to adjust to, and it lands kind of in the same spot. So I think we're sort of both right here, but what you don't want is somebody to come up looking like he can hit everything, and all of a sudden they find a spot he can't hit, and then all of a sudden he goes back down again, which happens too.
That happens a lot too, yeah.
That's the unfortunate part. Sorry, go ahead, Kevin.
Okay, so let's go back into the NCAA. And they actually have a board meeting, I believe it's today, where they already got their working committee did a recommendation for them, and it was basically they're just recommending that they allow student athletes, I love that term, to engage in name and NIL activities that are consistent with the law of the state where their school is located. So while 22 or however whatever the number is, the number of states is that have allowed the name, image, and likeness rights to accrue to the student athletes, if they're, take Indiana here, or Michigan, I think the law is mute on those. You know, it just doesn't speak to it at all, which means that consistent with the law, they can go ahead and do it. Now, you know, as Brendan said yesterday, and my God, we've been saying this since the O'Bannon case, which wrapped up in, you know, it took like 5 years, but it wrapped up in 2014, that the NCAA never got out in front of this, so they're totally reactive. But this, actually, this approach might save their business model, which is crazy to think about, but it very well might, because you can uncouple the athlete's earning ability from their scholarship at school. So you can keep them as basically unpaid labor or close to unpaid labor. I don't want to discount the value of a free education. It is extremely valuable, but it's not, it doesn't reflect the economic value that some of these athletes create for their school.
But
it will allow the schools to keep the business model as is and leave the players on their own. They are also allowed to use a professional services provider, aka a marketing agent, to help them with this stuff.
Okay, now I say see.
So now, how, you know, who's going to take advantage of the 19-year-olds? I don't know. That's a whole different can of worms here.
I see. This is not, again, I'm not criticizing worthy. I'm just asking economic questions. We're very concerned, it appears, with the few people that have the capacity to earn more, and saying they are not getting their full value because look at how much the coach is getting paid and all the other stuff. And by the way, you're not going to get me to disagree with that. But I will say that, and this, I'm going out on a plank here, where's Lou to save me? Women's fencing, men's God knows what, wrestling, that is nowhere near worth 70 grand a year to pay that person. Because they don't make a dime for anybody. If you're going to go down, if you're going to be that hard, if you're going to go one direction, you may have to go the other. And if we're actually going to start looking about how much people are, quote, worth, and if the university's not paying them enough, they should be able to pay more. You're also going to have to go the other way and say, your sport doesn't make a dime. We haven't sold a ticket all year. We're not paying you 70 grand a year.
But they're not paying the football players, and they won't be paying the football players, and they won't be paying the basketball players. And that's what will allow them to keep their business. It's the other sports that allow them to get away with not paying the football players and the basketball players, because they can say these guys are student athletes, just like the guys on the rowing team, just like the people on the fencing team. You know, that's how it's justified.
Oh, well, and the other thing, I bring up two more points. And again, I'm not giving answers here. I'm just questions. I'm going to say the most marketable people in my lifetime are not anybody who's currently playing, especially basketball, because nobody lasts 4 years. I would say that at the time, Lou Alcindor, who's the redheaded center who does the Portland,
Bill Walton,
those kinds of guys. Michael Jordan, if he'd have stayed at you know, for his senior year, and even as a junior, if you stayed a 4 years, there were all kinds of people I remember in my past that you could put Bill Walton or Lou Alcindor or you name it, Elvin Hayes. They would be a remarkable person that you wouldn't need the university at all when they were seniors. But this year, I had to ask Maddie, by the way, who the hell's going to be your number one pick? And it's some freshman from someplace?
From OK State, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's part of it. And the other part, I mean, the question I had, the first one that popped into my feeble brain was, okay, wait a minute. We're not going to allow anybody to have an agent for being a pro, but we're going to let them hire an agent, and it's not going to be the same guy, of course, be the marketing guy. And, oh, by the way, the amount of transfers from school to school in the 4 years the person's supposed to be wedded to the school is going up exponentially. Do I not see a connection to these agents? Are they actually? Because now part of it is going to be, hey, you're a second-string quarterback at State, and if I can get you over to whoever, A&M, you're not only going to be the starting quarterback, I got this, you're a good-looking kid, I can get you this Toyota ad. I mean, it's all going to become
part of this. It may not even be going over to another major school. It may be going to a MAC school, because you can be hot stuff in Oxford,
yeah,
Ohio, where you might not be able to be hot stuff in, pick another place.
Columbus.
Last thing before we get out of here, which schools do you think will be most advantaged by this?
I think that...
Just from a pure marketing standpoint, forget any sleeping.
Well, I don't know.
Maybe the
smaller schools
better at than others.
I think they're going to have a cow if you use the Notre Dame word in your ad at somebody's, whatever state fair. So I don't know how that's going to work out.
Yeah, you're definitely not going to get to use. Nobody's going to give up their rights to their logos, their property rights. No, and that's not just a Notre Dame thing. That's everybody. Nobody's going to give
right.
it up, because once you give it up a little bit, you wind up having to give it up a lot. A lot of your argument for protecting your patents fades away in court if you selectively or randomly surrender it. So that's going to be interesting to see how that works out. I think this is a big advantage for the state colleges that are statewide, they have an incredible statewide following. So that's Michigan, but not Michigan State. That's Ohio State. That's Alabama. I don't know that it's so much the Florida schools, because they're fragmented. There's
right.
a lot of divided fans. I don't think there's a lot of statewide attachment to the University of Illinois. I wonder what cities are going to be like. I wonder if Los Angeles is going to be a good place to go, because there's more opportunities there. There's certainly, if you want to get into theater or acting, in movies or anything like that, or media, it's a good place to be. But I don't think Northwestern's going to do well, because those guys are not going to ever measure up to the pro athletes in Chicago.
Well, but the other point is, this is the part that I was very upset with the NCAA. I got two real quick points, if I can do it in a minute, is if you're in the Northwestern drama department, okay, and you actually were part of a school play and you were pretty good, and Chicago PD wants to hire you for a private part, and you happen to be a football player, you should be able to do that, which you couldn't before. So I sound like I'm against this. I'm not. I just don't know when
Northwestern... Yeah, in fact, drama students Northwestern drama students routinely take time off of school to go make movies.
Well, but the part I'm having trouble with is, I'm being weird on it here, is you go down to Notre Dame and you'll see a big sign that has Adrian Dantley in it with his Notre Dame uniform and a big ad that says, okay, come to, Notre Dame alumni, something, something. I don't think that they should be able to put Adrian Dantley up there without paying him, because
I don't think they can.
Okay, but my point is, I don't know how either one of them goes without the other. You know what I'm saying? How if you just put Adrian Dantley up there without any of the other stuff, I don't know how effective that is. And if you just put a uniform up there without Adrian Dantley in it, I don't think that's all that effective. So how this all shakes out and who gets what, I guess, is what I'm curious about.
Yeah, it will be interesting to watch it unfold, and we'll keep tabs. It really is, I think there are going to be winners and losers in this deal.
Always are.
And Northwestern Nightside is an example of one that is, has some possibilities, but at the same time, there's so much competition for the athlete endorsement dollar, or the athlete appearance dollar in Chicago, that I don't know that there's going to be a lot left for Northwestern. How many people know who's on the Northwestern football team in Chicago?
We have a lot more guys taking their helmet off in the end zone. I would. Or maybe not. Maybe
yeah,
it wouldn't
you work probably for will. Penalty? So what?
So what?
Check,
all right, Kevin, we'll talk to you on Friday.
Winning smile.
SP Futures down 2, NASDAQ Futures down 5. Right back, Mr. Russell Rhodes.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, Give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of Home Source Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks radio show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate, this summer could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor, low interest rates and good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You can reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
There's something happening here.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures down 250. NASDAQ futures down 4. Nothing much really happening here. In the Dow stocks are mostly all open now. We got trading now. I won't say open. Goldman's down 1.5. Like I said, there's not much happening here. Microsoft's down 60 cents. Russell, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Doing all right. So, Maddie, do you think that we're going to get a quarterback modeling cardigan sweaters?
I just like the idea that a guy can get a part-time job now.
Well, you always.
How about that?
You always could.
How about a guy just being able to work? You can't work. Can't do anything if you're an athlete.
Sure you can.
No, you can't. Football players can't get jobs.
Well, you can't get a job because you're obligated to be there all summer. Now, that's a problem.
You can't get a job.
You can get it if the 3 weeks you are home, if you happen to be able to hook on to the garbage truck in your neighborhood, you can get a job. It can't be a booster, it can't be an alumni.
I don't think they can work.
I don't think they can do anything. I think the reason why they don't is because they gotta be at school all summer.
Well, that's probably part of it, but I would be surprised if they can work. I mean like anything.
Well, they always used to. And then before you had to be there during the summer, and then the problem came up with, by the way, the guy who owns the law firm is an alumnus and he's a booster, and the guy got paid $60,000 and he never showed up. You started to run into that problem. But I don't think
that's why I don't think they can work.
I don't think you'd ever got to the point where you absolutely couldn't have a job. But you know, you could be right, Matty. I'm wandering in a field. I would find that would be. I don't even know how the hell you'd enforce that for something where you can say you can't work at the local delicatessen or a coffee shop if you're home for a weekend. Boy, you could be right, but boy, that would be interesting. I don't know how the hell you'd do that. Do you?
Yeah, the rule, and it's gray, of course, is that you can have a job during the regular academic year and during the summer semester. But it has to be approved by the compliance office, and it has to be deemed that they were not in any way, shape, or form hired based on their name or athletic ability or reputation.
Which means...
So you can work at Subway, but that's it.
Well, no, it actually means...
Everyone gets hired based on their abilities and their name and their reputation.
I know, you just defined a job, basically the interview process.
Okay, maybe...
That's how everyone in the history of the world got hired.
Okay, but no... Expand. I know you can do this because I know you a long time. That interview process has nothing to do with Thomas, if he's the kid. It has to do with me. If I hire somebody from Notre Dame football at PTI, immediately me and my brother are going to be, they're going to know we are Notre Dame alumni, and by definition, we're boosters and they won't let them work here. Has nothing to do with Thomas,
which is stupid. And
you have to have given some money.
And I'm thrilled.
Well, I'm thrilled that this loophole will go away too, or whatever you want to call it, this ridiculous rule.
Okay, but I mean, I'm saying that that's what they're doing. By the way, Manny, I knew guys, we'll show go nameless, 20, 30 years ago that hired guys at law firms and they never showed up. So it's not like it never happened.
Of course.
Yeah, but I mean, so they define, what were you saying, Russell? I mean, but okay, in my 50 years since I graduated, 45, I'm going to say somewhere I sent them a check for football tickets or something. So does any check I ever sent them count? Well, I bet it does.
Well, I just know that the Penny Hardaway James Wiseman situation, where Penny helped his family move when he was in high school, because Penny Hardaway donated $1 million to build the new basketball practice facility. He was defined as a booster. So
right. It
was found that regardless of him being his coach or not, because Wiseman chose to play at Memphis for four games, that ended up because Penny was defined as a booster and gave a kid who was a recruit a benefit, that's what the NCAA is still trying to figure out, what kind of punishment to hand down on that one. So there's a little bit of a difference between a booster and an alum, as far as all of that goes. But I think it's great that they can work now and probably with less restrictions. I do know when I was in college, but that was a long time ago, that one of the guys on the golf team at Memphis actually delivered pizza with me for a few weeks during the summer. And he told me that I was like, are you allowed to work with the scholarship? Yeah, I'm allowed to work as long as he told me he was allowed to work as long as it was outside of the season. That was a long time ago.
Yeah, but I'm saying if
and those are the ones that I think that it benefits. It's not that it's most restrictive of are the ones that are not playing playing the more Olympic type sports that, you know, don't quite get the visibility and the extra perks that some of the other higher profile athletes get. I think this is something that's definitely good for them.
But you, we are, even you, who's, you know, the kind of, you know, the one percenter sort of dude, even you though, whenever people talk, and this is what bizarre is, the older I get, the more I recognize this, whenever people talk, there's a persona they project. Now, when you just said what you did, my vision mm-hmm. is you're working, and down the block is, like on the south side where I was, it's Fox's Pizza, it's Pete's Pizza, it's somebody innocuous's pizza joint, and there's two guys mm-hmm. delivering pizzas, and they're making, you know, 40 cents an hour plus tips. And you sit there and go, what could possibly be wrong with that? But what really happens sometimes is it's, mm-hmm. it's Domino's Pizza, or I'm not accusing them personally, And Joe Domino is one of the biggest boosters of Nebraska, and you're delivering pizzas for 20 cents an hour in tips. And oh, by the way, he's giving people $100 bills to give your buddy $100 tip every time he shows up with a pizza. So, I mean, people have abused it up and down all over the place, right? And that's why they say anybody who's an alumni is a booster. I'm an alumni. I'm no booster. I mean, the last thing I would pay some kid 30 grand from Notre Dame to sit around and do nothing in the place. What would I want him for or her? You know, I mean, but what if I was? What if that was my whole thing and Notre Dame winning? Why anybody would be like that? I have no idea, but they are. You know, so I mean, it happens all over. That's why these guys have, quote, rules, and why the rules, like any rules, are kind of useless, right? Depending. But how would you ever guess? If the guy walked around, unless somebody called up or took a picture of him handing somebody the Benjamin, I suppose it's more risky today with cell phone cameras all over the place. But you know what I'm talking about?
There was a Memphis basketball recruit that had committed to Arkansas, and he had when he was in high school, he basically had a show up and get a really nice paycheck job between his junior and senior year in high school. And he got turned in and decommitted from Arkansas and committed to Memphis.
Everyone wins.
Well, you know, I've
seen both. The story is that he basically just showed up and
showed up in an office and basically shut the door and took a nap all day.
Well, I've also heard...
At least he showed up.
You know, faint rumors. I don't know if you guys have heard any of these, but when somebody, and we've had some contributors to the show that have spoken off the record, where they might have helped some kids in college or in high school tutor them, right? They were good athletes, and they weren't getting paid. They were just, you know, being good guys. And all of a sudden, you know, the family might be poor as church mice, and all of a sudden one of the uncles shows up in a new Ford F-150. But I've also heard interesting.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know, it's not the dad, it's not, but it's somebody. And I've also heard that if one of those guys decides he's not going to, you know, Sidewash State, he's going somewhere else, that the guy who bought the 150 is saying, no, you're not. This is not that simple. I don't come up with 20 grand for you and you say, up yours and go somewhere else. I mean, there's, shall we say, some mobbish discipline to some of this. And you would that wouldn't surprise you, really. I mean, would you feel comfortable giving somebody a $30,000 truck and all of a sudden say, screw you, I'm going to Alabama? I mean, you know, Alabama better give me my 30 grand back or there's a problem. Right? Yeah. I mean, anyway.
No, and, you know, I grew up, you know, in Tennessee, right in the middle of SEC country, and where when I was growing up, the closest NFL team was basically the New Orleans Saints. And so NFL just really was not a thing. It was what state were you in, and that was the team that you rooted for. And it was recruiting was just vicious. Absolutely. Well, there wasn't national recruiting. It was a lot more regional back then, too.
Well, if you – when the kid from – what was his name, Eddie? The quarterback from Ohio, what the hell's the name? My relatives live there.
Ohio State?
No, it begins with a D. It's where the golf outing is. Anyway, it's a little town of just north of Columbus, and he's doing the color for football now. He was a quarterback.
Like Kirk Herbstreit?
No, the kid from Notre Dame. He actually a lot of stats.
Oh, you've spun this around like 30 times. So you're talking about what's his name? Brady Quinn.
Yeah, well, Brady Quinn is still. There's still people who are ready to hit him with the grocery cart when he goes in the store for not going to Ohio State and going to Notre Dame. I mean, he basically was treason on Ohio. Ohio State wanted him, and he left the state. You don't do that there. I mean, if they want you, I mean, Columbus, they're sort of like, I mean, even though they have two professional teams, the city that's got to be worse on that. Is it the state and the city is Lincoln, Nebraska. I'm stunned that those guys don't have a good team. I mean, there's no professional
and
team.
Haven't in a long time.
Haven't in a long time.
They were a powerhouse for 30 years.
I mean, that was they
haven't they, since haven't yeah. since they joined the Big Ten.
But there's nobody else there to root for. If you're not a Nebraska fan, what do you do?
Chris Spielman, the I think he's a Hall of Fame linebacker at Ohio State, College Football Hall of Famer, and then played in the NFL for a long time.
Played in the Bears, didn't he? For a year or two at the end of his career? No, that was Zoe Spellman.
Yeah, that was Alonzo Spellman. Yeah, Chris Spielman was a linebacker, played with the Lions, played with the Buffalo Bills, among others. But anyway, he was an All-American at Ohio State. And from some small town in Ohio, and I just remember him telling this story all the time, where Bo Schembechler convinced him and his family to take a visit to Michigan. And when they were getting recruited, and they went to Michigan, and him and his dad... And I guess had a great experience and loved it. And Michigan offered him a scholarship. And they said, you know, let us sleep on it. And now on the drive back to Ohio, he said, you know, Dad, I think I really want to go to Michigan. And his dad goes, you're not going to Michigan. You're going to Ohio State, and that's it. And that was it.
I can't live in this small town if you're playing for Michigan.
Right. It was a courtesy visit for some, and he had no idea his destiny was already decided by the old man.
Yeah, no way on earth you're playing for Michigan. But it's business, and there's loyalty. I've never seen after the crazy stuff people attribute to the Irish and singing the alma mater and all that kind of stuff. I never saw anything like Ohio State, where they sing the state song and the whole place is tearing up when they're playing Ohio. I mean, this is
creepy in those.
It
places.
Is creepy. It is
the crazy football states that are just nuts about college football is weird. It's really weird.
I mean, Notre Dame doesn't have anything like that. I mean, to me, well, maybe I was part of it, so I don't. But I mean,
I think they care about their team and they want them to win. But it's not a cult like it is in like Auburn or something.
Yeah.
Or like, you know, it's just different.
It's Alabama against Georgia. I mean, it's not our, you know, our hired help versus theirs. It's like the street fight. Your toughest guys against ours. It's like, okay, that's so. Russell, what are you seeing? We had Mike on yesterday going through all the VIX and the volatility stuff, and
mm-hmm.
we've seen, and I'm kind of stunned that I was kind of relating yesterday. I don't want to do it again about how people were so frothy on mortgages back in 2007, 2008. That there actually were mortgage portfolios that didn't have any mortgages in them, because the demand for mortgages was more than there were mortgages. So they actually had synthetic portfolios that mimicked other portfolios. And now it seems like we're so anxious to get stocks that are run up 10 or 15% a week. I won't say a day, but some have. I mean, nobody really wants a regular market that goes up, you know, even in a good year, 7, 8%. We're inventing.
Oh, gosh, no.
No, but we're inventing cryptocurrencies that aren't even stocks. They have no value, so we can trade those things up. It's like we're not even using tulips. We're inventing the flower that's going to be the tulip. I've never seen anything quite like this. I mean, have you or even read about it?
I think we have. It was the internet thing where there was truly nothing more than a website and a name behind behind a lot of companies.
Well, that's true. That's
did
true.
Not last too long. And then there were, I cannot remember the name of the firm, but there was one company, their job was to do nothing but buy shares in the other internet companies while they were still private.
Oh yeah, God, what was the name of those guys?
Their valuation went up when the companies they'd invested in had gone up as well.
Manny, I bet you could
like
find it.
A public company that was acting as a private equity in the internet space in the last 18 months of the internet boom.
Well, how much, is that similar to your, I won't say your girlfriend because I know you're happily married, but Kathy Woods, I can see you and her. Kathy, well, she's coming up with an ETF now of bitcoins, of all the cryptocurrency.
Well, she's trying to. People have been trying to get those approved for 3 or 4, 5 years almost now. 2017, I think. Yeah, we're coming up on about 4 years since the Winklevoss twins visited SIBO, and SIBO, which has an exchange that you can list ETFs on. They were all set to list the Winklevoss twins, the Gemini Trust Bitcoin ETF, which has never been approved. So
there's not approved.
Kathy thinks she's going to get a Bitcoin ETF approval. She's going to have to exhibit an awful lot of patience.
If that gets approved, then that will be.
It won't.
But if it does, it would probably be marginal, right? Or marginable.
Yeah.
Not marginal. It would be maybe both marginal and marginable. Well, if you want to actually trade this stuff, the closest you can get now is that Coin, right? Because it's the company that trades the stuff.
That's one of the things that you can. I mean, there are companies that have exposure. I think Coin may be one of them. I feel like there's another one as well. And then there are ETFs that give you exposure to companies that supposedly have exposure to the crypto space. And when you look at their portfolios, like Visa and MasterCard, or Visa's like at the top of the list, some retailers that might take Bitcoin at the top of the list, nothing that's really a cool, pure play in the crypto space. But the ETF thing for crypto, they just continue to turn them down over and over and over again. And when you file to create a new ETF in the way that we're talking about right now, it can take just 180 days to get a response out of the SEC. So tons of luck to Kathy. I've been through that process with some firms, and they're not making it easy. And every time Bitcoin does something like it did recently, where it dropped from the 60,000 to the 30,000 range, you just made it much more difficult for another year or two.
Well, was that the fiasco with the I'm sure there's still ongoing legislation, so take it easy because you're probably going to be an expert witness. But that what was the fiasco VIX? Was that an ETF or was that just a product that was a double listed?
It was an ETN that was, I'm 99% sure it was an ETN.
It was. Well, all right, what's the difference between an ETN and an ETF? I'm asking.
An ETN in exchange for, on the surface, they look exactly the same, as you can tell by me trying to recall what structure it was. An ETF, let me backpedal to the easy definition. If I create an ETF that gives you exposure to the S&P 500, every time you give me money for my ETF, I need to make sure I have the shares of the S&P 500. If I create an ETN that gives you the returns equivalent to the S&P 500, I am on the hook to give you the returns associated with the S&P 500, but I don't necessarily have to own the shares of the stock. And so an ETN is more of a bond structure that ties its returns to something that's non-bond-like. And that's what you had with the ETN that had trouble with Bitcoin, where it was giving you inverse exposure. I'm sorry, with VIX. It was giving you inverse exposure to the front 2 month VIX futures contract. And when you are, when you have short exposure to something like that, if it more than doubles in a day, which it came close to doing, it loses all of its value.
What now? Is there a third kind? Because it kind of fits between the two. If you have a commodity quote ETF that doesn't actually own the physical, but tries to replicate it by owning the futures.
If you have a commodity one. The gold one actually owns hard gold,
right,
and it's in a vault somewhere. Honest to God, it's in a vault somewhere. Bob Fassani did a story on it, and when they took him to see where they actually hold the gold, somewhere in Europe, they put him in a van, they darkened out the windows. I mean, it was very, very, very secure. But there are also commodity-oriented ETFs that use the futures contracts to give you exposure to the commodity, and the futures contracts, if you're constantly owning the front month future, you've got some roll risk in there and some other potential disconnects that where you're really not getting pure exposure to let's say oil, because oil is one that there are
the
oil that use
the USO trades a lot.
They use the futures.
Yeah, the USO has been around forever, and it's a horrendous product. When I say horrendous,
it USO has a combination of futures contracts, but I did dig into USO, and there were also swaps between the issuer of USO and various investment banks, and they actually used a bunch of different investment banks for the swaps. So if one of the banks went up, went under, they didn't have 100% exposure to that bank.
Now, when I denigrate a product, it's not full denigration. If you think that oil is going to go up 10% tomorrow, you can buy the USO, and I'm going to say you're going to make. I'm going to be nice to them. I'm going to say tomorrow you're going to make probably pretty close to 10%. But
you might make 9.5%. But it would track very, and all of those things for very short term exposure do what they're supposed to do. They're good trading vehicles. But if you want 6 month exposure to the price of oil, and oil goes up 20% over that time period, it's very possible that you could only get half of those returns.
Yeah, I was going to say,
depending on what they've structured underneath it.
I was going to say if you want to be long oil to the year, 2032, and you buy the USO, oil could go to $200, and
the USO
could be down, type of thing, because of how much they pay in the rolls. That's interesting. I was going to ask you something very, very interesting right now, and it slipped my mind. I'll think of it again. When you have products like that, though, and I mean, most people, you know, barely understand the track stocks they're trading. I mean, it's, I mean, I don't, I,
oh, I know for, I know for a fact from, I know that daily there are people that are buying things that they really don't understand what they have.
What's going up?
And
that's all they care about.
Yeah, and that in that right there is why the SEC has such a difficult time of putting an approval stamp on a Bitcoin oriented ETF, because they do have them in Europe, and there was one in Europe that's been around for some time. If you went to buy the ETF, you were actually, or the, I think it was probably an ETN structure, but you were, when you went to buy it, you were actually paying like a 30 or 40% premium relative to where Bitcoin was at the moment.
Well, you, if you, and again, I'm not sure I can ask you to comment.
And they assume people would not understand that. They would just look at it and say, oh, well, Bitcoin's going up, I'm going to buy this thing right here. And then Bitcoin goes up 20 more percent, and it doesn't budge.
My my bro, who you know very well, way back in the day, I don't even know if he remembers his password. He might. I didn't ever ask him. I think that when he had the first Bitcoin vending machine in his neighborhood, it was in like the...
Yeah.
I think he put $20 there, and I think he got like $15 worth of Bitcoin. It's like a $5 fee.
Yeah, he. I know exactly who you're talking about, because he actually got a paper one that he carried around in his wallet to show people that he was involved in the crypto market.
but he was only three quarters involved.
No, but he did. But here's the thing: is he bought it when Bitcoin was about $1.
Yeah. Well, now I don't know if he can find his
I keep meaning to ask him if he hung on to that or not.
Well, I think he hung on to it because he doesn't know how to get into the thing to get it. I don't know if he
doesn't know how to get out of it.
Yeah, doesn't know how to get out of it. But I mean, we could have bought. I actually went online. We'll talk about this. We could have bought a Bitcoin vending machine. There was actually a serious machine.
Between your lavish studio and SIBO on Dan Buren, the guy that has the little tobacco lottery ticket. He sold the double sized Diet Coke. In a bottle. That's why I would always go there. But he had one of those machines for a little while, and I think a handful of people.
Well, if Bitcoin ever went out, the thing would double as a ATM. It was a serious machine. It was like $5,000-$10,000. It wasn't cheap.
Oh yeah.
SP futures down 4 and NASDAQ futures down 14. You're like right back, stocks and jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment.
Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Ollies, Mr. Weber on the board. SP futures down 4, NASDAQ futures down 10, so we're not doing much here at all. Dow futures down 11. I say some Dow stocks aren't even trading yet, which usually by this time they all are. So it's going to be a slow one, barring any kind of real information here. So we'll see. But we're down to, actually, Manny and I were talking about before, I don't think Memorial Day, Labor Day are even part of the vacation thing anymore, because most kids, most people's schools don't close after and they open before. So I think if you're going anywhere on a family vacation, you're going these few weeks, you're not going. So I think that probably really does do a lot for the market slowness. Over in Europe, we've got DAX down 105.7%, FTSE down 22.3%, CAC around down 30.5%. So European markets are down a little bit. They're worried about this new COVID strain. And they've got inflation problems over there, and they've got negative interest rates, real negative interest rates. So I think they're in kind of a world of hurt there as this goes forward. Nikkei down 21, that's flat. Shanghai up 18.5%. Hang Seng down 166.6%. So again, kind of up and down over there. They were all down yesterday, though, pretty heavy. Yesterday, the Dow was up 9, S&P was up 1, NASDAQ was up 27. So I guess had a slow day. Today, bonds 1.46 on the 10-year rate. One minus 0.19. They've been unchanged for a long time there. Japan, positive 0.06. Again, they've been stuck right there for a while. Oil, up $1.08, 74.06. That's 1.5%. Brent up 80 cents, 75.56. Natural gas up 9 cents now, 3.71. We're done here, I'm going to ask him about what's going on with this natural gas. If it's the heat out west, I suspect it might be, but I'm not sure. Gold down $5, $17.58. Silver up 2 cents, $25.92. Copper up 2 cents, $4.30. And Bitcoin down 1,600 to 34,731. Just pretty much right where it was yesterday morning anyway. So it must have been up after the show, and now it's back. What do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports, man?
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. The good news is that the tri-state is back open. It was closed right near I-55 due to a crash earlier this morning that involved a couple of semi-trucks, but they were able to get the tri-state back open, and so that's great news because that was causing a significant backup by the Hinsdale Oasis and I-55 in that area in the southwest suburbs. No issues coming in on the Ryan, I-57 or the Bishop Ford. Same for the Stevenson. It's actually still pretty quiet, which is rare for this hour. Traffic building steadily on the Eisenhower and Kennedy, though. Same for the Edens. Lakeshore Drive looking good in both directions. Suburban tollways are all quiet. Only crash in the area is out in the northwestern suburbs. Route 59 at Lake Street, there is an accident. But everything else all quiet out there. Weather today, lots of clouds, some more rain in the area, and a high of 78 today. But this should be the last day for rain, at least for a little while. It's been plenty of water, I would say, over the last week. Right now it's overcast and 75, going up to a rainy high of 78. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 106. Right now it's clear and 88. In sports, White Sox beat the Twins last night 7-6. Cubs lost to the Brewers up in Milwaukee 2-1. Diamondbacks lost to the Cardinals 3-2. NBA basketball, Suns are back in action tonight. Game 6 of the Western Conference Finals for our Phoenix listeners. Suns lead the Clippers 3-2. Game 6 is in Los Angeles. That's a 6 p.m. Phoenix time tip-off. Chief.
This Atlanta team, I mean, not that the White Sox didn't earn it when they won World Series, because they surely did, but didn't the everybody they played, their number one pitcher got hurt in the first game every series, every post-game series?
They had a lot of breaks go for them in 2005 that led them to go 11-1 on the playoff run, I believe it was what it was,
yeah.
Which is, I think, still maybe the best of all time or one of the best of all time.
Can't be much better.
Yeah, but they did sort of kind of luck out with injuries and fluky plays every series, but still. That's how it goes. And now NBA basketball, it's been that way every round. LeBron loses Anthony Davis and the Lakers get knocked out. Clippers lose Kawhi Leonard and they may get knocked out. Suns were without Chris Paul for a while. They were able to get him back. Now Giannis goes down for the Bucks. The Nets were without Kyrie and James Harden. And so they got knocked out, even though I think they were probably the best team in the league. I mean, it's just one after another, and it's last man standing at this point.
A question for you, gentlemen. Long term, not this year because I think the rules are still going to be messing around, but given people's relative popularity, meaning, the high school star maybe doesn't even make the traveling squad in college, and the college stars, some guys make it in the pros, but not that many. Do you think that this rule, if it shakes out in somewhat of a normal fashion, you think it's going to cause college players to stay longer in college? In 20 years from now, it's going to be. I mean, would
oh, you, do you mean not going pro early?
Yeah.
Okay, the first thing when you said stay in college longer, I thought about me as an undergrad and my 6.5 year plan.
No, you're Belushi.
The one and done thing goes away.
You're today's world's Belushi. 7 years down the drain. Although yours aren't down the drain.
I really was.
In Tommy Boy, Chris Farley goes, a lot of people go to college for 7 years, Richard. And he goes, yeah, they're called doctors.
Yeah. Doctors. Yeah. Well, it's taken me longer than that to get that title. My understanding is the NFL is actually thinking about it. Don't they have a 3-year requirement?
Baseball.
NFL has a 3-year requirement. You must be 3 years out of high school to be eligible. Baseball, you can
basketball,
come.
Basketball, you have to be a certain age.
Yeah, basketball, it's 1 year out of high school. And
19.
Yep. Well, I think it's 1 year out of high school.
But basketball, and they've been doing this kind of quietly, but they recruit against the colleges for the G League.
Yes, they've started to be more aggressive with that over the last handful of years, especially since this new commissioner took over. Baseball is the one that I think has the best rule, where they say you can come straight out of high school, no problem, but if you choose not to, then you have to go to college at least 3 years.
Yeah, I
like that the best.
What exactly are the rules? What exactly are the rules in hockey? I don't know, because I mean, those guys are drafted early, right? Then you go to college. Are you?
They usually get them high school and develop them along, don't they?
Can you leave after any time you want in college?
I'm looking it up. I'm not sure.
Whatever. I guess what I'm saying is if you're going to be a fourth round pick, you could easily be a star at some college, and if you've got a gig with like the local radio station or something, I'm not so sure you want to graduate. You want to go into the draft after junior year and not wait for senior year if you're making decent dough.
No, so I think it's very possible that they may stick around a little bit longer. I'll tell you what I'm concerned about is this. You can transfer and immediately play after, just transfer from school to school.
Well, that's not part of the bill, is it? Is that part of any of these bills, Minnie?
Well, no, but I think both of those two things together
might create some issues.
Well, the
by the way, if you're the best basketball player, if you're some breakout guy, you're Scottie Pippen at Central Arkansas, and you have a great freshman year. What's to keep Calipari from going down there and getting him for his sophomore year?
Nothing. That's what they're doing right now.
I know.
Calipari just poached one of my guys from Iowa, C.J. Frederick. He was a Gatorade Player of the Year in Kentucky, but Kentucky didn't recruit him, and so he went to Iowa and played there for 2 years and was really good, and then Kentucky said, actually, you are good. We screwed up. What do you say you transfer to Kentucky? And, of course, they quote-unquote did it without tampering. And it was his dream to play there, of course. He's from there, and he was, you know, he's like a Kentucky boy. So he left first chance he got. And that's a lot different. That's going to happen even more to the smaller schools, like you said, Central Arkansas.
Well, are we?
But it's happening everywhere.
Yeah.
Well, Maddie, it's the haves and the have-nots.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Maddie, was the not having to sit out a year, was that COVID related? Is that gone now?
That's what I was going to look up, because the rule has always been you can transfer, but you have to sit out a year unless you have some sort of approval. Like it's for example, there was one guy that transferred. His mom had cancer, and so he wanted to transfer to a school closer to home, and they waived his 1 year sit out. There's certain exceptions, but for the most part, it was a 1 year sit out. Well, then with COVID, they waived that, but I thought it was temporary. So I need to look up and see.
If your coach gets fired, you get to go too, right, or something?
I think that's right. If your coach gets fired now, you can transfer without penalty. By the way, real quick, the NHL, the only requirement I see for the NHL is that you have to be 18 by September 15th in order to play in the NHL. So I think you can get drafted at any age, but you can't play in the NHL until you're 18.
But in baseball, I think the difference there is if the Cubs draft Maddie out of high school and he says, screw it, I'm going to Texas A&M, they lose the pick.
Well, they get a compensatory.
Right, but they lose their rights to you.
But they lose their rights to you, yes.
But in hockey, I think they keep the rights to you when you're in college. I mean, you watch these college games, you're watching Michigan play, Notre Dame, they'll say, well, this Matt Weber was a fourth round pick of the Buffalo Sabres or somebody. And,
I think you're right on that. Yep.
But I still don't know if you can leave in a year. I bet you probably can. But baseball, you can't go until after 3 years and they lose their rights. Does it strike you as odd that they're all different? I mean,
well, they're different businesses.
Well, but I mean, the colleges are somewhat the same.
I mean, it doesn't strike me as odd that in the NFL they don't want anyone under the age of 21 essentially being in the NFL, because you would get killed if you were 18 trying to play in the NFL, especially with what we know about brain injuries and everything. That makes sense. The other ones, I think everyone should be able to be able to play whenever they want. If I'm Luka Doncic and I'm a phenom at age 16, then I should be able to play in the NBA at age 16 if my parents consent.
Well, whatever happened to this is probably more of a Luke question, but what happened to the kid from Ohio State with the big lawsuit? What's his name?
Maurice Claret.
Yeah, did whatever happened to that? He just died.
Well, he sucked at football. That was the problem with him. But I don't know about the lawsuit. I'd have to look into it.
But he
wanted to play without. He played 1 year at Ohio State his freshman year. They won the national championship, and he wanted to go pro, but he couldn't because of the three-year rule. Is that what you're talking about?
But then he didn't do anything for like 2 years, got heavier, and then he was at, what was that ridiculous league that lasted?
Well,
like
he did go to the NFL briefly with the Broncos, and I don't think he lasted more than one season. I mean, he was terrible. Then he went to the XFL or something.
I thought he went to the XFL first, where he could still. Maybe it was after, but that,
I think
how long
after.
Did that league last? Like a month?
Yeah, it didn't last very long.
But yeah, he was. His point was, I lost all my skills for 2 years at age 19 by not being able to play halfback. I don't know if he's right or wrong with that.
Well, he probably was right, and I think he got kicked out of school for off the field stuff.
Well, he wasn't selling all the jerseys and stuff they gave him, or some crap?
I think that was a different guy, but he might have been doing that too. But anyway, he was.
it's hard to keep these.
And by the way, you should be able to sell jerseys. I think, who cares? But after 1 year, he got kicked out for off the field stuff, and then he basically had to sit around for 2 years. And wasn't able to keep playing at the college level, and then his skills in his mind deteriorated, which maybe they did.
Oh, he probably was.
I don't think he was ever going to be a good NFL running back, but
he will. Yeah, I think his skills might have deteriorated because he wasn't behaving himself all that much.
That could be too.
Just sort of saying. Anyway, Russell, I don't know if you had a chance to listen to what Mike was talking about yesterday with the the VIX. I mean, between the two of you, I'd like to get both of your opinions. And he was saying that the VIX is creeping down here, but considering how the market's behaving, it's still, you know, pretty high if on normal terms, given it's a holiday week. I mean, it's still over, you know, it's 16.7 as of today. Matter of fact, it's up 70 cents this morning, which is somewhat bizarre, seeing as the futures are only down 3 points. What is it telling you anything, or is the volatility, put it this way, you could come up with an idea that the risk in the market, and this is very similar to 99-2000, I think, in that when I was in the OEX pit, the risk in the market wasn't in the top 100 S&P stocks. It was in all the other stuff that was trading for 400 when it was worth 2. I mean, is the VIX other than just collateral damage, is this any kind of a read on the stocks that are trading 400 that are, you know, 80 times revenue and 90 bazillion times earnings? Does it give you any read at all on that, or no?
Oh, sure, it does, because you saw when all the goofiness was going on with GameStop, and there were hedge funds that were having margin calls associated with that. They were having to turn around and sell other stocks, which was putting it was a very short-lived thing back in the spring, but you did see that carry over. The reason the VIX has been trending lower, and this comes from some outreach that I've done through EQ Derivatives, the consulting firm I work for. About 90% of the institutions we reached out to in the first half of the year said that they had some sort of overlay or protective strategies on through the end of this year, which means they've already bought the insurance. Well, VIX is nothing more than a good indication on how aggressive the demand is for portfolio insurance. Because it's mostly driven by S&P 500 put option activity, and when you've got everybody kind of hedged and feeling somewhat secure, they're okay putting more money to work because they feel like they've got some protection against a 5 or a 10% down move. And when we start to get some of the moves to the downside, you don't see VIX react normally as much to the upside as you would expect. So that's just an indication of everybody kind of being prepared for the storm already, instead of being surprised by the storm. My buddy Steve Sears came up with the name Fear Index for VIX. I wish I could come up with like a name like Benifer, like combining surprise and fear. Screen Index. I don't know.
But you've
got to have a combination of both to really push VIX higher. And I think that, personally, I think VIX is kind of low compared to where it should be based on recent risk in the market, but it's worked its way down because you just don't have a lot of demand for portfolio protection, because a lot of people are already set with portfolio protection going into the second half of this year.
I'm gonna hit you up with, we got some time. I hit you up with like three or four disparate, I use the term, facts that I see, and you put them together for me, since you're the professor. Some of the groups that I do, the PIP program for, the conservative one. I mean, I've always been a guy that's, and I learned this back when the XMI, that piece of crap index that they. Amex had was a response to the OEX. There were 20 stocks in it. They're Amex stocks.
It was like basically 2/3 of the Dow Jones Industrial Average, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, but I think there were 20 stocks, right?
It was only 20 of the 30 stocks. Yeah.
I can't remember if it was 20 or 30. I thought it was 20, but I could be wrong. Anyway, so back in the first Gulf War, one of the people that I was managing money for, I won't say who, said, you know, why don't you try, it was an interesting phenomenon, Russell, because the implied volatility before there was a VIX in the individual stocks was less than it was in the XMI itself. So I put ratio backspreads on where I went long premium with, you know, delta neutral, but with, you know, more generally was buying more calls than I was selling of the short of the stock in every one of the 20 stocks, and then sold premium in the XMI. And we made out like a bandit. We did real well, and it was a pretty imaginative thing to do. And of course, you know, I'm being congratulated by the people that manage the money. I did a great job, blah blah blah, usual ridiculousness. And I went back and I went back through every single one of the 20 stacks. And if I would have missed two of them, I'd have gotten my ass absolutely kicked. Because if it wasn't for American Express, which moved like, I don't know how many standard deviations, because of course nobody was traveling. That had a massive move. I think one of the oil companies did, and one did. In other words, if I'd have played it cagey and just said, okay, I'll just do 15 of the stocks, that's good enough, I could very well have gotten destroyed on something that was a good idea. So right now, some of the places I do business with, they have a general program where they'll buy a lot of, shall we say, NASDAQ stocks, okay, and they'll buy QQQ puts to essentially cover it. And most of the time, this is somewhat genius, because if you buy the right stocks, you know, if you're buying, well, traditionally, if you bought the Amazons, the Googles, and everything, even in a crummy market, those things might go up. And, oh, by the way, if the market goes down, your puts are going up, so it's worked pretty well. As a matter of fact, but now, all of a sudden, you're seeing chinks in that armor. That, you know, this year, when we had a little bit of a sell-off earlier, it wasn't very much. But the puts didn't move, and the stocks went down. And I'm looking at, and I'm not, this is not a sell or don't sell or buy or whatever. I'm looking at like this Zoom. And I, as you know, I look at things very, you know, sometimes glass half empty. Stocks trading, 395. Everybody's target is 413. They had the best year ever last year because the world shut down, for God's sake. They're 134 times earnings, and I'm saying that they're probably 80 times revenue or 70. I don't have that statistic up, but I'm making a stab at it. To me, this thing, if this was trading 100, I wouldn't say it was a buy. Okay. But now what my question sort of is, or not a question, but if I decide I want to get, you know, puts in the QQQ, I think you could name 15, 20, 30 stocks like Zoom that all could go down by 50%. And I don't know that you make any money really on the QQQ puts. They're not in the index. I'm finding, unless you want to go buy puts on every single one of these stocks, which the volatility there has got to the moon. I don't know how you hedge it. I mean, you're probably better off having, but to say I got $2 million in these 20 high flyer stacks, so I'm going to hedge $2 million worth of stock in the Qs and think I'm even. I'm asking you. I don't think I am right now.
If you're running a portfolio where you've got those sorts of names, you're definitely going to have to look at the individual stock puts. But you know, much like this one's in 7 minutes, I can't fully explain this one without doing it at a very high level. But if you are concerned about stocks like that, and you start buying puts on, and you start buying puts where you're pushing the implied volatility on stuff like that up, it does start to work its way into the index puts. Not on a one-for-one basis, but kind of like the fair value relationship. When you talk, every morning you talk about the S&P 500 futures, where they are, and that gives you an idea of how the S&P 500 is going to open up. The individual stock implied volatilities do have a relationship that can be arbitraged with the index or the QQQ implied volatility. So they don't move one for one in sync with each other, but there is a range where one will start to influence the other.
Especially
in the NASDAQ space. More so than the S&P or Russell 2000 type of companies.
But influence is not synonymous with a hedge. It's slight hedge.
Right. But it will show up. It will, there's a VIX the NASDAQ 100 volatility index, which is a VIX for the, based on the NASDAQ 100, and the ticker's VolQ, you can see VolQ adjust for Microsoft's earnings.
Right.
Whereas you don't see VIX adjust for individual company earnings.
Well, you might,
you do,
but
see
it would
VIX
be...
adjust. You do see VIX adjust for an employment number that everybody has an eye on, and that's what we've got going on this week.
Well, you might see VIX adjust, but it would be yeah, in a hundredth of a point where you'd never see it. It probably does adjust. It's just so small you wouldn't.
Well, it adjusts a little bit more than that. But what's funny is because this Friday is before a 3-day weekend, and holiday weekends do have a dampening effect on VIX. I think you're going to see VIX hold up through Thursday close, and then it's going to come under a lot of pressure on Friday.
But then it will pop back Tuesday morning.
Because we'll have the employment number behind us, and then you've got the holiday weekend and kind of the summer doldrums in front of it.
You're not going to see a buy order after the number Friday morning unless it's a real wacky number.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, bud, have a nice weekend. S&P futures down 375. NASDAQ futures down 475. Talk at you next week, bud. We'll be back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4966.